a week of violence, lawlessness, and disarray in Hong Kong.
The goal this week was that they really tried to just paralyze and cripple the entire city during the week.
And a look at this week in the 2020 presidential campaign.
The voters that we're talking to are not looking for more candidates.
Plus, President Trump asked the Supreme Court to block a request for his tax returns. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at escalating violence in Hong Kong, here's what you missed. Authorities say a 16-year-old killed two fellow students and wounded three others before shooting himself in the head at his high school in Santa Clarita, California, yesterday. Here's Captain Ken Wegner of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Homicide Bureau on the attack.
Within approximately 16 seconds, it was over, and the gun was not displayed before that. So from the time that he withdrew the handgun from his backpack to the time that he was on the ground with a gunshot wound to his head was about 16 seconds.
Authorities say they don't yet have a motive for the shooting. However, they did say that yesterday was the shooter's birthday. The shooter remained in grave condition. This August high school shooting was the 38th school shooting this year. That's according to the Gun Violence Archive, a nonprofit research group that counts gun deaths. And President Trump's top White House economic advisor said that a U.S.-China trade deal was near, but that President Trump wasn't ready to sign off on it just yet. From Washington, Harriet Torrey has more.
Top White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow is speaking in Washington, and he had warm words to say about the economy, and he said that a trade deal with China is likely to happen soon. Although President Trump, while he likes what he sees, he hasn't signed off on a deal yet, and they're not quite there. Still, he was optimistic about the economic outlook, saying that it was good, and he said that he thought the Fed was on the right track. He also said that there is truth to talk of what's called a tax cut 2.0. This would be tax relief for middle-income families, and the White House hopes to present something on that in the middle of next year.
Mr. Kudlow was speaking at an event at the Council on Foreign Relations. And President Trump has asked the Supreme Court to block a subpoena for his tax records. The subpoena was issued by New York prosecutors who are investigating hush money payments to two women who allege they had affairs with the president. A lawyer for the president said the subpoena violates the Constitution and is therefore unenforceable. A spokesman said the New York District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. would file his response at the Supreme Court next week. Now, our main story this morning. It's been a violent week in Hong Kong, where anti-government protesters and police have engaged in some of the ugliest clashes in nearly 6 months of unrest. Here's what one anti-government protester, he just gave his first name, Sam, had to say this morning.
Definitely, I'm definitely worried about, people, protesters getting beat up, police getting beat up, innocent civilians getting beat up and burnt, like we've seen. Definitely is a big worry.
As of this recording, protesters were still demonstrating in the city center. Steve Rusalillo is in Hong Kong, and he's been covering the protests all week. So, Steve, walk me through what we saw. Why have things escalated?
The protests in Hong Kong have been going on for nearly 6 months now, but they really took a turn for the worse after a student unfortunately passed away recently after injuries caused after he fell in a parking garage in a spot that was very close to where police were using tear gas to disperse protesters. So this student's death really sparked a lot of outrage in people and essentially took the protest movement to the next level. They really, the goal this week, and I would argue that they succeeded at this, was that they really tried to just paralyze and cripple the entire city during the week. And it was a big difference from what they had previously been doing with a lot of protests on weekends and at various locations around the city. But this week, the goal was, we are going to absolutely cripple the entire city. We're going to disrupt transport. We are going to make it difficult for people to get around, to go to work. And you know, they did it. I mean, they came out in droves. They took over the city's financial center in Central. They took over lots of universities around the city. Several of them have since canceled the rest of their semesters because it has gotten so bad. So it's really, this has been a key escalation in what has been a months-long movement of protesters against the government.
I was looking at some of the images. They're pretty dramatic. I mean, what is it that the protesters want, though?
So the protesters have five demands, and this was initially sparked by concerns over an extradition bill that would have allowed suspects to be extradited to China for trial. That bill has since been shelved, but the protest movement has just morphed into something even bigger than that. It is really an anti-government movement, it is an anti-police movement, and it is an anti-China movement. There's a lot of concern about China's encroachment over Hong Kong, which is a semi-autonomous region within China that has its own rule of law. People are worried that that rule of law is being hindered by China.
And what has Hong Kong's government said in response? Have we heard anything from the chief executive, Carrie Lam?
Carrie Lam has come out, and the government has condemned all acts of violence at this point and have tried to basically reestablish law and order at this moment. But, you know, a lot of the protesters say it's just never enough. And it's interesting because actually Carrie Lam and several other government officials met this week to discuss ways that they could potentially come up with some sort of solution. But they didn't announce anything concrete on this.
And you mentioned China earlier. We saw some comments from China's leader Xi Jinping earlier this week about the protests in Hong Kong, right?
So Xi Jinping was in Brazil this week, and he was speaking at a meeting among key emerging market leaders. And he came out and said that he was firmly in support of the Hong Kong police in strictly enforcing the law, and really was basically making a statement that he supported a very tough stance on the protesters. And so basically what you can read into that is that China is not backing down from this.
And I mean, these protests, what impact are they having on the quality of life in Hong Kong? You live there. We saw that the economy recently entered a recession. What does it feel like to be in the city right now?
In the city at the moment, I mean, Hong Kong is in a recession, and you see it basically everywhere you look. Tourism is way down. Hotels are struggling tremendously. Their occupancy rates are very low. Restaurants are just seeing fewer and fewer diners than they used to in the past. Even just walking down some of the busiest streets in Hong Kong, they are just not nearly as packed as they used to be. It's this situation where almost every corner of the economy is feeling an impact one way or another. Now, that said, though, another interesting element of this is that, you know, living here, you can sort of bypass a lot of the things. You know, the protests, you kind of know ahead of time where they're going to be, and so you can avoid them pretty easily. I get questions all the time from friends and family back home, from my parents asking me, oh my God, how is it? Is it dangerous there? And, you know, it's fine. You just know which areas not to go, and you're okay. But of course, the concern is that changes, and if it gets worse, and if the economy keeps deteriorating, that won't be a good situation for anyone.
You can find all of our coverage of the situation in Hong Kong up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We're going to talk about Treasury yields today. They've been rising. That means the price of Treasuries, of course, has been falling. It suggests that there's less investor demand for the assets. They're usually seen as a place of safety during market turmoil. Caitlin Ostroff has more on what's calmed investor fears of a recession.
So during the summer, you had a lot of uncertainty in the market. You had U.S.-China headlines flashing where it looked like a resolution wasn't likely. You had U.K. Brexit news where it looked like things might escalate further and the U.K. might crash out of the European Union without a deal. And so there was a lot of risk-off sentiment, meaning that investors were really worried that the market might do poorly, and so they went to safe havens or assets that do better in times of uncertainty. And so what we're seeing now is, as some of those headlines seem to reflect more positive news, it seems like we're going into a less risky period. Investors are moving out of safe havens like the U.S. Treasury, and they're starting to put more risk back into the market. And when that happens, the yield on the Treasuries tends to go up while the prices fall.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. Former Ukraine Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch is set to testify as part of the impeachment inquiry. Shelby Holliday says that if her previous closed-door testimony is any indicator, her comments today will likely focus on Rudy Giuliani.
She talked a lot about Rudy Giuliani's role in this unofficial, informal back channel to Ukraine and some of the meetings that he was having with the prosecutors in Ukraine and former prosecutors. She just talked about how unusual it was and how it was undermining official U.S. foreign policy. And she raised some alarms about Rudy Giuliani's associates, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman, who are now indicted. But their efforts, she testified, were essentially suspicious. She thought that they were acting in their own personal business interests and not necessarily in the interests of the United States.
We'll have more on what she says in our afternoon edition. Finally, it's time for our biweekly Friday series looking at just what's happened in the 2020 presidential race. We'll be talking to our reporters who are out covering candidates all across the U.S. about the most significant developments to keep you abreast of everything that's happened. Today, we're going to hear from Eliza Collins. She's been in Iowa asking voters what they think about new entrants to the crowded Democratic field.
Well, the voters that we're talking to are not looking for more candidates. They say that, you know, they're already moving down their list. They're not looking to add more people. Michael Bloomberg, of course, is a name that people know. He's got a lot of money, which would help him enter the race. But he's, you know, a year behind many of these other candidates. He's not going to be on the next debate stage. A lot of the strong staff has been hired up. So he definitely faces an uphill battle, even with name ID. And he also faces a battle, you know, ideological battle. There are other candidates in the race who have similar proposals as he does, and they've been in it for a lot longer. They've got a lot more money. You know, Joe Biden is a much more well-known person in the party, you know, and he's got name ID, and people really feel affection for someone like Biden. So it's definitely an uphill battle if Bloomberg's to get in the race.
We'll continue to keep you updated every other Friday as part of our Vote 2020 coverage. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about these new entrants to the Democratic field? You can tweet us at WSJ Podcast or email us at whatsnews, all one word, at WSJ.com. Your comments might be used in follow-up reporting. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.